Welcome to LifeRx Podcast, a show about living consciously in all aspects of your life with authenticity and integrity. I'm Eva Patel. Welcome again to the show, and I hope you had a great week and you're enjoying the blooms of spring. So today's show, we're talking about work-life balance. Are you feeling overworked and finding it more challenging than ever to juggle the demands of your job and the rest of your life? You're not alone. Today, a lot of people are having a more difficult time finding balance in their lives because there have been cutbacks and layoffs where they work. They're afraid that it might not happen to them, so they're putting in more hours, being overworked, and yet they still want to live a life. So how do you create a work-life balance? So keep listening to the show, and later on today we have two very special guests, Lynn Kaufman and Michael Valentine. Lynn and Michael are principals and founders of Kaufman Valentine & Associates. Lynn is an experienced consultant and business process coach for all professional levels of knowledge and information employees. Recently, she's created a personal lean program for the University of Toyota. Michael has spent over 20 years with IBM Corp, and post-IBM, he has over 20 years of solid business consulting and coaching experience. They both just recently last year published a book, Slay the Email Monster, 96 Ways to Dramatically Increase Productivity. Their clients range from Fortune 500 corporations to startup entrepreneurial firms and cover all major industry groupings and include both profit and not-for-profit organizations. So stay tuned, and after the break, we'll have our interview with Lynn and Michael. Hello, Lynn.
Hi, Ava.
Hi, Lynn. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you.
And welcome to the show. And today we have Michael with us. Michael, are you there?
I am.
Hi. Thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate you both doing this.
Welcome. It's good to be here.
Thank you. So what does the term work-life balance mean?
Well, let's start with what it is not. It is not an equal balance or a schedule with any kind of mathematical precision on the activities that you're doing. Work-life balance was a term that came into pretty common usage in the work life, I would say sometime in the 80s. And it was a bit of a result of advances they were making in manufacturing from the industrial age on how to get a level workflow to get goods produced. And they were trying to take that concept into office work. And so that was the time also that you heard a lot about time management, you know, Covey and things of that nature, about how you can determine to get your schedule done on time. And so that result was kind of reaching for a magic mana almost of, if we could only get it squeezed in just right, we would know how to be much happier and get our work done in an appropriate manner.
Right.
And it was also a period of a lot of change, that there were more women coming into the workforce. There were pressures that we could have, you know, our work separate from our lives, instead of having everything all holistically put together. And it was a way to look at routine work.
Uh-huh. One of the factors of a lot of the new technology is that there's been a blurring of what is work and what is personal. And work is almost actually where you are now instead of where you go. And uh-huh. Often things that used to be considered an intrusion on personal life could actually wind up being a benefit to people. For instance, if I used to have to be in the office and not able to get to my son's soccer game, then that was an upset in my work-life balance. If I have the ability with my smartphones and with Wi-Fi to be at the soccer game and to take 5 minutes during a timeout to answer something that would have previously required my being in the office, that's a benefit to my work-life balance. So it's not as clean as it used to be. And it's not even a point of balance between work and life. It's more what is the relationship in any given time.
It really is, if you want to go with it, some level of definition. Work-life balance is how are you living your entire life with as less amount of stress that you possibly can. And you have a reasonable feeling of control and satisfaction to get your work done and live your life as well.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing that with the listeners, because I really relate to that, because before, you're right, in the 80s and the 90s, it was all, you know, you had this schedule to live by and you had to go into the office, and we didn't have the, even though we had emails, it wasn't the same level of, you know, smartphones that we have today with all the Wi-Fi that we can be anywhere and conduct business. And we're also changing where it's not like a section of your life is business, a section of your life is home, and a section of your life is personal. It's like there's a nice fine balance of blend and flow, which I think is kind of cool. Yeah. So if you could share with our listeners, you know, is work-life balance really attainable in today's time?
I do believe it's attainable, but it's a little bit like, you know, saying you're going to diet. It has some simple concepts, but it's not real easy to accomplish.
One of those diet things, huh?
Everything seems to relate to that. When I bring up a diet as a comparison in a lot of the work that we do, people go, oh, okay, I get how it works there. But it applies to the way you approach your life as well.
Yeah, it's like a habit that you've got to form, and it's a discipline.
Absolutely, and it's being conscious about what your choices are and not just being pulled along without making some boundaries and decisions on what you want to do. We really can't have it all. You know, there was an ad, I don't know, for women that, you know, we can bring home the bacon and fry it up in a pan and do everything or something to that effect. And we can do everything. We just can't always do it all at the same time.
Exactly. And that whole concept of having your cake and eating it doesn't really work, because you can't do it all. And first and foremost, who wants to do it all? I mean, I'd much rather be happier than be superwoman, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's very true. So it is attainable, but it does take some discipline.
So I have a question there for our listeners. So if it's attainable, how does one know consciously, like, what to say no to? Because a big factor here is people have a hard time saying no, whether it's your boss asking you to do something or a client asks you to do something, yet you know it conflicts with something else. What's a good way to balance that? Is there any kind of scenario you could give us?
Well, no is a great word to be used, and many people in the workday really understand how to use it. We often say that no should be the gateway to yes, and yes often is the gateway to no. So often when people are faced with choices that they feel it's either going to be a benefit to my work and take away from my home life, vice versa, they say yes to things and it winds up being no to both. Because when you say yes to things that increase your stress, you're not as productive as you need to be for the work.
So right, because you're not conscious, right.
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, bring it down to something a little more realistic, because a lot of people are avoiding the word no, thinking they're sparing someone else something or avoiding for themselves some conflict. And it's something like if, you know, you have a business trip coming up and you have to get all these arrangements in line and you're working at work and you get a call from the PTA saying, can you bake 12,000 cookies for the event tomorrow at lunch for somebody's birthday? You say, okay, you know, and then you put a lot of stress on yourself when you should be saying, as an alternative suggestion, say, I can't bring 12 dozen cookies. I could do this, though. I could either give you, you know, $20 to go buy some cookies, or I could give some cookies I have at home that are already that I purchased and send them with Susie to work. That way you're giving an alternative and you're setting a boundary that's true to both you and the PTA, if you have an allegiance or you want to support your child, and your work. You're not trying to squeeze more things onto the head of a pin.
Again, not taking on that super person role, but just knowing where your boundaries are. That's great.
Right.
You're setting up good boundaries. That's great. So let's get to this great recession that we're going to. How has this great recession affected the concept of the work-life balance?
Well, I think it has given an immense dose of reality to everybody. I do think there was an awful lot of, when things were chugging along so well for so long for so many people, it did give you a somewhat of a false sense of nothing could go wrong. I can just get another job if I don't like it. I have to follow my passion because doing something that's not my passion is the wrong thing to be doing. And I think the Great Recession has pulled people up short a little bit to go, wait a minute. What is it I want out of my work and out of my life? I may not be able to get the best thing that I want for here, but that doesn't make me any better or worse as a person. So I may have to hunker down, if you will, in a job that may not be the most perfect of fits until I can figure out a path that will let me do something different or accept it as it is and get your satisfaction from another element of your life. I have a son that had to make a decision. He and his spouse are raising a daughter, and they were, you know, he's in a job, just recently graduated from college and got a job that didn't pay real well. It's kind of an entry-level job, and his spouse is making a little bit more money. And between them, they were making it okay, but the child care costs were, you know, really eating into their budget. So they had to make a decision. Okay, my son decided if I take the night shift at my job, and you work the day shift at your job, that's making choices to make your whole family work within realities of what's really happening and not a Pollyanna view.
Wow, yeah, that's really good. So basically taking what's happened and looking at it very realistically and making adjustments accordingly.
Right. So balance is maybe even more than just yourself. It's looking at the entirety of your family.
Yes.
Another thing which happened is that there were lots of people who found out or discovered that maybe they were making the wrong set of priorities. Many people really dedicated much more to their job and felt a great loyalty to the job at the expense of the rest of their lives. And in many cases found that when times got tough, the job went away, and suddenly they were sitting there faced with the idea that maybe level of commitment, unrealistic when things were good, really showed itself when things got bad, and they had found that they had squandered some time in the balance that they could have been given to their family.
What the recession is really bringing up in the realities is that the loyalty from the company is not always the same as the loyalty that you've brought to the job. And so if you take that and give some power back to the employees from just being so one-sided, and that is a big change, again, in society. And the reason that's happened is because we do have the Internet. We have much more transparency about what things are happening and more options to be able to get information and to get things done. And that has changed, along with the concept of the millennials or the newer people that are working in the workforce. They are, in fact, not hoping for balance. That's what they expect. And if they're not going to have it, they may or may not even join the company. And so it's going to change the balance of power on what a company can expect from hiring as well as an employee can expect for getting hired.
So you're finding that even large companies are having to really look at this Great Recession and redo things the way they do it to treat employees differently as well.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a very large cultural shift happening here in the relatively near future.
And could you just expand for our listeners a little on that?
Well, in order to, you know, we are beginning to come out. There are signs of life happening here that we're coming out of this big recession, and the rules of the game have changed a bit. And so it's not universal, it's not everywhere, but there is a little rumblings going on that, you know, a long time ago they used to talk about, telecommuting and job sharing and flexibility of hours, and it was almost a perk for certain people. it now may become a little more common and that you will have to offer that in order to attract the employee in the first place. It will be broken down into the somewhat of the level of the job. It will change from sometimes when people went to a more flexible schedule, it also was kind of code for, you know, we've taken you off the fast track. So I think that will shift some as well. I just think that there's going to be a real shakeup. It's yet to kind of reveal what it'll be. But I think there will be a lot more give and take from the employee-employer relationship than it's been in the past.
There is a coming perfect juxtaposition of technology, ecology, and corporate business strategies. What I mean by that is it is possible now, much more than it has ever been, for work to be where you are instead of where you go. And with the global nature of work and the availability of information and knowledge through the internet, through the cloud, through all of the different technological ways that we can do it, it's possible for schedules to be different, for people to work from home, not having to necessarily have 40-hour work weeks in a brick-and-mortar building. Mm-hmm. And this makes a difference to all kinds of things like commuting, which then touches climate change with all of the emissions of people sitting on the 15 and the 91.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these things, I think, are really making an impact on the nature of work, especially knowledge work. Now, obviously, manufacturing is different. But knowledge work will enter a whole new phase that I think is going to be really exciting.
So how can companies support their people to achieve a balance to meet the needs of the company and the needs of the employee?
Well, I think instead of having just this kind of smorgasbord of you can do it this way or you can do it that way, you know, you can work from 9 to 5 or you can work from, you know, 7 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, or you can share a job share, I think that they're going to be looking at it from a little more strategic point of view because the nature of work has changed so dramatically, you have to look at it differently. And let me explain a little bit about what I mean by it's changed so dramatically. There were kind of three myths, I'm going to say, around work. And first one was that the more hours you work, the more work you got done. Necessarily true for what's the result you're trying to get. When we're talking about knowledge work, you know, the longer you work, actually the less productive you become because you become tired. You're not like a machine. You can't just keep adding time to the deal because you have to think that about how people actually work.
Refresh.
They have to be refreshed, and that's not a waste of time. You know, people used to think sleep's a waste of time. I haven't got time to sleep.
Absolutely not.
And it's absolutely not, because you break down. It's actually counterproductive.
Yeah.
And we have to kind of change our mindset around that. And so do companies have to change their mindset. I mean, a really good example is this all the stuff you've been hearing on the news about the
air traffic
controllers. A lot of that problem is because they do not recognize that the human beings that are doing the air traffic controlling must not work shift after shift and back to back to back because it is not capable of mental acuity to be able to do work in that way. So they have to think people don't react just like a machine. We have to look about how we get results out of people and not run them as if they were a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Another myth was that if you add more people to the team, you'll get finished sooner. You know, if you were trying to build a railroad, you just keep adding members to the gang to be pounding the spikes into the railroad, you get it done faster. When you're in knowledge work, on some level, the more people you add to try to make a decision, the slower that process is going to go.
It's completely
so we want
opposite.
To make sure
I agree.
That we just don't add people to the mix because that actually can, there's a point of counterproductivity with that. There are studies showing that groups of 6 to 8 are often the most effective. So if you get groups that are 15, you've already cut your productivity, you know, nearly in half. And that the third one is that productivity is more or less a constant and can be scheduled, and it's not. How do you know when you're going to come up with that brilliant new ad campaign? It isn't quite as predictable. There are some processes for sure, but it's not as predictable as just saying, you know, like a metronome, that it's just going to keep coming in such an even manner. We do have ebb and flow. We have to think about some people work better at night. Some people work better during the day. Some people need to be out in the outdoors and not have a direct approach to having creativity happen. Some like to have the conflict, which helps push them into things. So we have to learn how people work to produce the results that the company is looking for.
We have had major shifts in the past in the nature of work, and we're on the verge of another one. We've been talking about it, but it hasn't really realized to the extent that I think it will. We went from an agrarian agriculture kind of base centuries ago to the industrial base, where we started getting things like production lines, 40-hour work weeks, people, a schedule which didn't really have to be on in the agrarian economy because you worked when the work presented itself, you know, on the farm. When it was ready to harvest, you didn't look and see if it was a certain day or month. You went to harvest.
Yeah.
When we went to the industrial economy, it got much more rigid, much more linear, and we shifted the mindset even to the idea of a 40-hour week or weekends off or what have you. We haven't really caught up with it because much of the way we have thought about work is still in that industrial mindset. And I think that's where companies are going to have to complete the mind shift to it really is different. We are working with humans. We're not working so much with machines. Humans are not machines. We have the technology to do things that we couldn't do in the old kind of economy. And so those companies that are going to have the competitive edge are those that recognize this and really utilize and leverage their people and their tangible equipment, computers, time, and all of this to really get into the new knowledge-based environment.
So while those sets of tools of flex time and other things that have happened in the past are only tools to the end, and people have to, and companies have to know that one individual may use different pieces of those tools, it's not a standard one-size-fits-all to get the productivity. That's one of those things that will have to also be looked at is not only the legal regulations and the HR policies, but how do we get individual groups to work in different ways? Because how the marketing department work could be different than how the accounting department works. So companies will have to support the people's jobs to help give them the right tools to help them get their job done, and that doesn't mean just computers.
And again, in the knowledge-based world, some things are very creative, and you're right, you can't sit in a cubicle and have major creation and breakthroughs. You've got to have your little space.
Right. We often tell people when we go into work, what are they paying you to do? And after a few minutes, we basically say, to think. So how do you know if I'm sitting in my office quietly staring out the window, if I'm wasting time or if I'm actually solving a problem?
Yeah.
That's the other thing. You have to know what it is you're trying to do and support the result more than how do you support, you know, what your idea is of what I'm doing work in appropriate manner. I'm not sure I quite said that right, but it is still about driving toward results.
Okay, and what about those that are feeling very overworked and having a challenge of juggling different jobs and the rest of their life? On, I mean, obviously we've talked a lot about the workplace, but on a personal level, you know, what is it that when you're super overworked and it's really affecting your personal life, how does one kind of know when to, you know, stop here and give this a little bit more attention? And what could they do in their personal life to give them that relaxation?
Well, the first thing to do, if you are really overwhelmed, you have to decide first if you're in one of those situations that is, in fact, a true crisis. Because if it's a true crisis, you have a different set of expectations that you must deal with. And what I find is a lot of people are operating as if they're in crisis, but really aren't. So we have to separate those two things out. So if you're talking about people who are more or less driving themselves there when they're not in a true crisis, just by their activities, we'll take a look at that because the other one is a different case. But the idea is you have to balance, and I don't know, from a woman's perspective, women typically are really bad about delegating. And I think you need to delegate and ask for a whole lot more help than we typically do. that's one of the steps.
Several years ago, a person in Stephen Covey's organization wrote a book called Quadrant 2 Time Management. And the idea of that was that there's a matrix showing urgency versus importance. And the idea behind it is a lot of people urgency side when it's really not that important. And this is the crisis that, you know, many people have had this case where the phone rings and there's something that's really going to be a crisis. So they drop everything and spend time working on it. And then when it's over, they realize it wasn't really that important. And sometimes we need to really understand the difference between urgency and importance. And I think a lot of the stress that people feel in the overwork and juggling so many things, reality is you can only do so much and you can only complete so much. And the idea is to not be driven by the urgency, what one of my clients called the tyranny of the urgency, and make sure that you give the time to the things that are important before they get to be urgent. That takes some courage sometimes because it brings that word no back into account.
I actually want to add, you know, we've been talking about still accomplishing things. That's reaching achievement. And I don't think we give enough weight to joy in our lives.
I was just going to say, I mean, time just flew by, but one of my things I wanted to bring back is, you know, so how do we bring joy back into our busy lives, you know? And it's true, a lot of business people, a lot of people working, we just went so serious in this whole Great Recession and you know, struggling a little bit as well, that we've lost the joy. We've squeezed it out of every cell of our body. So how do we expand that back into our lives?
Well, you know, joy doesn't have to be all capital letters all of the time. And if you intersperse little tiny bits of joy throughout the day and give them to yourself as a gift, you're going to not only be better for yourself, you're going to be better for everybody else. It's kind of like, you know, on the airplane, they ask you to put the oxygen mask on yourself before you put it on your child. So you just decide one day, you know what, on my way from home from work, I'm going to actually pull over to the side of the road for 20 minutes and look at the ocean or whatever you pull over to look at. Before I go home, take some time to give yourself what we call white space to regroup and experience. Don't just sit there. Experience it. Get out of the car. Feel the sunlight on your skin. Smell the ocean air. Listen to the birds overhead. It is about experiencing life. We go through life so much without feeling.
I agree. We do. We forget the empty spaces that we need and just to be in nature and just feel that wind against our skin. It's phenomenal.
And you have to take the time to remember to do it. If you have to set an appointment with yourself to do it, to start, do that. Because it's a habit.
But actually, you know, one of the things that I have asked some of my clients to do is as they're doing their planning and they're doing their calendaring, to actually do that, to actually put in the calendar those spaces and those times. Because sometimes you'll do what you tell yourself you're going to do.
Once you put it on paper, it happens.
Exactly. And so most people, when you look at their calendars, you see everyone else's hands on their time. You see what everyone else wants from them. I want people to put on their calendar also things that are important to their own well-being, their own joy. And to the degree that you do that, you refresh yourself, recreate yourself. That's what recreation means. And you're much better and actually much more productive. Some of the enlightened companies have actually built into their environments gyms and quiet rooms and break rooms with ping pong tables or whatever. Many of the newer companies like Google really expect, you know, the younger people expect, as Lynn said, to have a degree of like balance, joy in their lives.
To have the pool tables and be able to chill, yeah. That's great.
Exactly.
And I agree. I had a board meeting one day. I was in London with some executives, and I was in charge of the board meeting, and I took them to a park on the swings where I grew up, and just yesterday, I met one of the executives, and he came back, and he says, oh, my God, he says, that best meeting I've ever had in my life is the one that Eva took us to in the boardroom on these swings, and the swings were kind of in a triangle together, and we had the best creativity and some of the best ideas while we were doing that. So I do agree, sometimes just being out there and thinking out of the box just gives us so much pleasure and joy.
Absolutely.
This makes me think of one of my favorite phrases. And we'll laugh at this, but one of my favorite phrases is, it's not either or. It's not either work or life. It's work and life.
It is, and it's balancing the two.
Yes, it's the relationship between them. And in many cases, it can be the same thing.
Because the reason you're working is for what? And that's what people forget to ask themselves.
And then, yes, I have to say that sometimes we get so caught up with work, we forget what we're working for. And to tell you the truth, I mean, in this recession, one thing that I even learned, I'd much rather have less but have the simple pleasures. Even if it's sometimes I'll find this great cup of tea, you know, the white teas with all these good essences or whatever, and it gives me so much joy. And it's
Absolutely. Something so simple.
And we're
back about experiencing. You need to fully
it is.
Be in the and experiencing. Look into someone's eyes. How many people have you actually looked at? You know, human beings crave that kind of interaction,
yeah.
both for yourself and what you're giving to the other person.
Yes,
you know,
I agree.
So take little small steps. When was the last time that you rode a bike or did something silly? You know, think about things. You know, hop to work and don't care that somebody thinks you're crazy.
Yeah, just do what you have to
you know,
do, yeah. Yeah, and don't take life so seriously. I think that's one of the things that is on my agenda. I've taken life seriously, and I want to be a little childlike now and have some fun as well at the same time.
That's right.
There was a great movie years ago with Tom Hanks called Big. Do you remember that movie?
You know, I do.
And he was a little boy who suddenly got big and wound up working in this company. And everything he did from the kid. And it was fun, and it was frivolous, and it was light. And
childlike without being childish.
Yeah, childlike without. So it's the wonder and the curiosity of a child without the childishness. Yeah, I get that.
So he actually changed the culture of that company. It was really a great movie.
Yeah, I'll have to rewatch it because I have to say I've kind of forgotten what it was all about. But it's true, we do need to bring that little childlike joy back into our lives. And I can't thank you enough that the time went by so quickly, and it was just beautiful having you both here. And thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. And, have a lovely day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for today's show. Hope you all enjoyed the show, and I'd like to thank my guests, Lynn Kaufman and Michael Valentine, again for coming onto the show and chatting with me. And don't forget, you can give us a ring or send us an email. Send us an email at liferxpodcast@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 415-322-8777. We always appreciate your feedback and would love to share your emails and voicemails on the show, so don't be shy and tell us what you'd think and also tell us what you'd like us to talk about. So thanks again and stay tuned for the show next week. Namaste.